Okay, I got the thumbs up. I'm good to go. And it seems like this mic is hot because I can hear myself echo in the room. So that's good. Welcome to Welcome to day two. You're here. It's good. Some people have coffee. I've got water. We're all set. My name is Rick Claus. My particulars are up on the screen if you're interested. Twitter handle is RicksterCDN. In case you want to include the tweet, the session code for this one is #WSV302. And it's a session, it's called Get Out of Dodge, Migrating to Windows Server 2008 R2 X64. This was created as part of a second series that I did. I did a first series last year about Active Directory migration. It's very well received. Took it across Canada and across the United States. And I got lots of questions from people in the crowd. Well, how do you do file servers? And what about print servers? And I got this damn certificate server, and I don't know what the heck to do with it. What can I do? I made content to be able to bring it here today, so this is fantastic. We're going to get started. But before we do, actually, one thing to another. In case you haven't noticed, I am Canadian. My flag is a little crumpled, unfortunately, because it had to go through security. My maple syrup made it through the biohazard screening in New Zealand, and so this is actually a giveaway prize for a question that I get for the fresh maple syrup from Canada. But I noticed that we have some similarities down here in New Zealand as to up in Canada with the Commonwealth. The first similarity that we have is that our money looks a heck of a lot better than the money from the United States because it's colorful. The other thing I noticed that we have down here is the fact that you guys have a very similar approach to what we have to the religious state of sport. So in Canada, our religion is hockey. And it's a game of guys on ice with skates and hard things and pucks and lots of padding, stuff like that. You guys take it up to a whole new level. And I discovered this when I did my walk around on Tuesday when I arrived. With rugby, you don't have pads that I can see. It's on grass, but it is definitely infectious with people that are interested in talking about hockey or talking about rugby. Same thing if you go up to Canada talking about hockey. Now, the interesting thing is that when I got here, I wanted to kind of pay homage to rugby, since it is the national sport that happens to be here. And my speaker shirt wasn't fitting quite right, and it's a black speaker shirt. And so I thought I would change it out for the appropriate shirt presenting in New Zealand. But the problem is that I actually have to still maintain the fact that it's a speaker at New Zealand, and so I have it modified slightly to say Tech Ed New Zealand. So I'm good to go, and then I find out from my buddy in Calgary, who used to be from New Zealand, says, hey, you got to take in a match if you can. I'm like, great, where can I go? I'm going to Australia next week. He says, oh, when do you leave? And I'm like, I'll leave on Saturday. It turns out you guys are playing the Wallabies on Saturday, and it's sold out. But if you go to Ticket Tech and you click on the links and you do all your searches, you find what I call onesie-twosie seats. And I'm the proud holder of a new seat, platinum level, row 33, seat number 2, for my very first international rugby match to watch the All Blacks defeat the Wallabies. And I will wear this shirt on Saturday because I've been assured that you guys are going to win, and I'm looking forward to it. This actually, quite frankly, scares me. What do they call that, what they do? The haka? They're petrified. They're standing looking like this. I have no. If they did that on skates, that would be terrifying. But back to the real session, if you could, please. We're going to be talking about upgrading your systems from infrastructure-wise 2003 environments to 2008 R2 X64-based systems. This is a session where we're going to have to, first of all, kind of set your stage, do a bit of a recap. Where are you at with your infrastructure? Where is everybody at in general down here in New Zealand and in the rest of the world? And then I have to use a scenario because I hate talking about features. I am not a feature demo guy. I'm not going to show you how to install software. Well, a little bit, but not really. You guys can figure out the click-through wizards, I'm sure. There's command lines in this. There's PowerShell in this. The best part is it is being recorded. You will be able to see it afterwards if you want to download it afterwards. And you will have access to the slide deck. I've left in all my notes and left in all my links to all the articles that I used. So hopefully I'll be able to get your attention and keep your attention throughout the whole thing for what we're doing. And I mentioned I'm scenarios. Well, I'm also demos. I'm more demos than I am slides, and so there's going to be a lot of stuff up on the screen. I'm going to be using Zoomit so you guys can see it. So if any time you can't see the screen, you got a question in the back corner over there, just let me know. We'll do our best to be able to do it. You've probably already heard that these sessions are 60 minutes, and they're normally designed to be 75, so we're all crimped down. It just means that I'm going to have to drink more coffee before starting to be able to get through faster so we can get through all the entire content. But I will leave you with an action plan, and then off we go. We all set? We're good? About? How is it? About. There you go. So, when I did my last session on upgrading your Active Directory, which was very well received and lots of questions that came out of that, people said, well, you know, what about the rest of the infrastructure? Because Active Directory obviously is like the heart, the breath, and the soul of your infrastructure, but it runs on top of other stuff with lots of what I would call supporting actors, if you will, inside your infrastructure. And so that also has tended to be a little bit neglected over the years because it just, you know, if it works, you just leave it alone and you work about the other stuff that happens to be going on. So I actually got this one quote from this one guy, and he came up to me and he said, Rick, you know, if I actually had a dog when I deployed my infrastructure, because I was the guy that deployed the infrastructure, my dog would be dead by now. 11, 12 years old infrastructure, you know, the dog is going to be on life support if you happen to have it in that kind of situation. So infrastructure is one of those things where if you implemented it yourself, you know what it is, you know how it runs, you just let it run, and then you just patch it, and you maintain it, and it's all good. You don't really have to manage, you know, DHCP all that much, or manage your file and print servers once you got the basic stuff all set up and going. And so it's kind of hard to get the capital funds to be able to go off and fund projects to go and revamp it to the latest and greatest, although you will have a much better experience, you will have a lot more capabilities and time on your hands to be able to do stuff should you happen to go up with that newer infrastructure. And so think about that. If your services are over 11 years old, what does your infrastructure look like? A picture of my server room up there, generally speaking, was not high-tech, did not have structured cabling, didn't have server racks, didn't have air cooling and conditioning 11 years ago. You know, it migrated and progressed further. I'm hoping no one has this kind of infrastructure still in place in their environments today. Anyone? Any takers? Is this your server room? Anybody? Nobody. Good. State of the art down here. Fantastic. And again, 11 years ago, I was working on projects for migrating from a beautiful multi-master domain of NT4 up to this new thing called Windows 2000 that had a resource requirement of 256 megs of RAM and 1.8 gigs of disk space. Things have changed. And again, generally speaking, if your infrastructure is installed and working, don't touch it. Just leave it. That's the general mantra that most people have for where things are. But that wouldn't be any fun if this whole session was, okay, just leave it where it is, thank you very much, here's the eval forms, don't forget to fill them out. This is actually about how to move to that new environment. And so the scenario that I'm going to use to talk about this is lovely Contoso. Contoso is actually, in case you didn't know, a fake shell company that Microsoft created for the sole purpose of demos. There's about a dozen of them, and they each have their own Wikipedia page. So Contoso is supposedly a bank. We're going to be talking about that as a bank perspective. They're going through an Active Directory 2003 environment upgrade process because they saw my session last year. They have multiple regional offices, but most importantly, they have Active Directory integrated DNS. They have DHCP systems that are in multiple spots for the different environments. They've got file and print services servicing their clients, and they've also got certificate services for their wireless network and for their private email signing and stuff like that. But most importantly, they don't have any cash. They can't buy consultants to come in and help them. They don't have any resources to be able to assist. They can't buy third-party tools. What can you do out of the box to get from x86, 2003, to 2008 R2? Well, some of the challenges that they're faced with really are time constraints. If you're running 2003 architecture right now, you're probably running on old hardware. I've seen some systems that are running on old servers that aren't rack-mounted, that are about this wide and this tall, PowerEdge servers that are labeled compact, that you'd have to hold your breath and wave the holy water in front of it whenever you reboot it because of a patch day. You never know if it's going to come back. So if this is you, you know about the fact that the time constraints are there. I mentioned the budgetary issues. I also mentioned that potentially you don't have the most credibility from an IT department with the rest of the business to secure more funding, perhaps, because you're still viewed as a cost center. This is your time when you can actually start to move towards more as a business unit that provides value back to your organization going with some of these newer technologies. But then I like to use this thing called the I/O model to go through and kind of evaluate, okay, how am I doing? How's my environment going today? Like, is it mostly basic? Is it mostly manual procedures? Would I be in trouble if the main system administrator gets hit by a bus because he's walking on the wrong side of the street because he's in Canada, not New Zealand, where you drive on the right, not on the left? How good are you guys? How prepared are you guys to be able to go? That's where the status is for this Contoso organization. So, okay, great. We're going to go ahead and start. So migration versus an in-place. This is the first audience participation session right now. Okay, ready? How many people here prefer a migration? Put up your hands. Whenever you're approaching any kind of a task, you prefer migration. That's about 30% of the room. How many people here prefer in-place upgrades? Think of that for a moment. Windows 98, upgrade in place to Windows 95, to Windows XP. I was going the wrong way. To Office XP, in-place upgrade to Windows Vista, in-place upgrade to Windows 7. How people prefer the in-place upgrade process? Still one person. Good to meet you. Oh, 2-3 people in the back there. Do you guys see the video of the person that actually did an upgrade from Windows 1.0 all the way up to the current version? That was beautiful. And we kept the shortcuts. That was amazing. However, I am not a fan of in-place upgrades for the main reason that it brings all the legacy, hunkered down junk and fixes and patches and things that weren't documented that you did to those systems to make them work up to the current version. So I'm personally a fan of the migration aspect of things instead. So the in-place upgrade replaces the operating system on an existing computer, just the OS in place, but the big thing is configs and data are brought across. So we already know 30% prefer migrations. Only 3 people prefer it in place, so we're missing about 68.5% of the people in the room. You guys are on the fence? Yeah? Well, this might change your mind. There is no in-place upgrade options that we're talking about here. You're screwed. You're stuck. You have to do a migration. You can't go from an x86 platform to x64 platform directly. You have to go in and do a shell game, whoop, swap to get around to your new upgrade. So there's good and bad to that. The good is you get a clean new operating system and you drop your data and config settings down there. You do it all in a time frame that people don't even notice, and boom, you get to go off and watch the next match, as opposed to having to plug in disks and wait for the installs and do the upgrades and everything else. So the benefits, basically, as I mentioned, you can go from x86 to x64 platform. You can go from physical to virtual because it's a new install. You can go from a full server to a core install. Windows Server 2008 R2 core installs are a sick, beautiful thing that you guys should absolutely be using for your core infrastructure services. I'll talk more about that later. Clean operating system installs really means stability, and then also reduces risk and downtime. I like that one. I'm not very risk. I'm risk adverse. Although people like to say I'm very risky because I break lots of things. I'm risk adverse, believe it or not, because I don't like to have to do extra work. And so if things screw up royally, you just turn the system off, bring the other one back up again, and no one's the wiser. And you get to go back and try it again the next time around. So we're all on side. We're all faced with this upgrade process. And why don't you guys go ahead and get started? Why don't you do it? Come on. Beautiful. You already have. You should be up here talking with me. Maybe you're overwhelmed. You're full of time and having to look after keeping the lights on. You're waiting for Service Pack 1. It's already out. It's going to be better. Really, do I have to go ahead and do this? But it comes down, I heard all of these, but it comes down to really, you're overwhelmed, you're overworked, you're overloaded, and you don't have time, and really, it's a big ball of fish. Ball of wax. It's a big kettle of fish of systems you have to look at for figuring out how do you intricately go ahead and move these things from one system to the other system to make it all work. So really, today, this session, we're going to be able to help you out, and eventually you guys are going to be able to help everyone else out that's not inside this room that can go off particularly the session after the fact. Y'all in? You good? Good. I got one nod. Someone's awake. So first off, where do you get all this information? Let me address that main issue here. There's something called a TechNet portal. Well, there used to be something called TechNet portal. They moved it. Now it's called a TechNet library module, where it's a single place, one-stop shop for all your upgrading needs to the 2008 R2 migration platform. It gives you links and all the related documentation you have to have. It also gives you all the planning information as well and gives you all the stuff to the links to the community forums as well to be able to help you out. That's free. It's there. You can get it, and everything's all good. So how do you find it? Anybody? You Google it. Oh, nice. Sorry. This is the Microsoft conference. You Bing it. Do you know what Bing stands for? The joke that I have that Bing stands for? Because it's not Google. But you turn on and you look at your Bing site, you do TechNet Migration Portal, and then you come back with the results, or you can just go ahead to Microsoft.com/migration, and it'll take you to this lovely formatted library you can go off and download and read. I have direct links to all those articles that I'm referring to inside that library in case you're wondering. So the migration process really comes down to this kind of a flow that we'll be going through with our scenario. You got to go in, take a look at the portal, do your planning and preparation, read the guides. Read the guides. Do your planning. And then you're going to be going ahead and installing some tools that are based on PowerShell on your source servers, on your destination servers, and then you go off and you work your voodoo magic to make it all work, which I'll be showing you today. Kind of simple. The scenarios that are supported, I'm not going to go through and read this all. You guys can read them. But basically, think of it, you can migrate from anything 2003 up to 2008 R2, from physical to virtual, from full to core. So you have the opportunity to go off and to make a bunch of new choices. And so I recommend that you make these choices and decide. Who here is using Server 2008 R2 core systems now inside their environment? Show of hands, please, please. Let's see. Only 20% of you. Those 20% of the people that are in the room that use Server Core reboot their servers 80% less than people that install full installs of Server 2008 R2 because of security patches. They have a smaller attack footprint that they have to worry about from a security perspective. They have easier management, once you get used to it, of the systems that can be fully managed remotely. I see a snicker from the fourth row over there. You can turn on remote management capabilities and load the remote admin tools and have that puppy up and running in about half an hour. So it's actually pretty sick once you get it going, provided you get a Windows 7 box to be able to run it from. And then also work on how to minimize that process. And so let's actually go ahead and get started. Oh. I guess they have my old slide deck up here. So I actually went ahead and made a nice Visio diagram of how everything was going to work today, but I didn't have Visio on my laptop to be able to recreate it, so I drew this. This is our network that we have. We've got a 2008 R2 system up here in the top corner that's running. He's up and happy. I happen to have both File and Print, DHCP, and also my certificate server. File and Print temporary, DHCP temporary, and certificate temporary. Those guys are already all installed and up and running. And I got a Windows 7 box that's up and running too that I'm going to manage these systems from. Good? So, doing our planning aspect for how we have to do stuff. I made a list. This is the stuff we're going to be covering today from our list perspective, from my process of going from 2003 to 2008. First up, read up and plan. Second, install the tools, finish the AD project, DHCP migration, print server drivers, file server drivers, certificate services. So let's hit the very first one right now. Can you all please raise your right hand? Everybody, come on. Raise your right hand. Repeat after me. I promise I will read the documentation and do my planning, or I will put a bad jinx on the block, all blocks. I don't want to see them lose on Saturday. Got it? Okay. So we just did our planning. We're good. Next session. We're going to talk about doing this destination server setup. So really quite simply, we have to install the tools on the main box. Get the server source box ready to go from a tools perspective, get the destination server box ready to go from tools perspective, and be able to go off and to do that install. The actual install on the 2003 system, that's the original source, you've got to have space, you have to have .NET Framework 2.0, you have to have PowerShell, you then copy the tools down to that box, you register them locally, and then you're off and running the races. So, let's take a look and see how this works, and I'll show you a bit about my infrastructure if we're all good here. Okay, this is my server right here. It's running. You can see I've got a whole whack of different systems that are up and going to simulate my environment, and I'm going to fire up and take a look at my 2008 R2 system, which is my domain controller. I'm also going to be using my destination server, which is my DHCP number 2. Where'd he go? Not there, not there, not there. Did I not attach up to him just yet? Okay, let's bring him up. Okay, this is my temporary server for my DHCP system, so there was known as my destination. I need to go ahead and to make sure that he's ready to go. I'm going to be installing some things on him. But you know what? I should actually step back one more moment and take you to the main guy, which is my source system. So here he is here. So you can take a look over here. This is running 2003, a hard-coded address of 10.50. Pretty simple. And he's running DHCP. I need to go off and install PowerShell on him. To do that, I've already copied the files down to the source directory, and I just need to install PowerShell. Because he has Service Pack on him as well, he already has the .NET framework installed. We're good to go. Get this guy kicked off. There we go. Finish off the quick wizard for PowerShell install. You guys read that agreement, right? There we go. So again, this is my source system. It's running 2003. Have to get PowerShell on it, and I'll be able to go with the migration tools. While I'm waiting for that, I want to go ahead and make that package. If you remember that I have to have a package up and running. So fire up a PowerShell prompt. I'm going to say import module server manager to bring in the server management capabilities of the box. I'm going to add in a Windows feature. I'm going to say migration. So you can do this also from the GUI interface if you wanted to. You see it was successful. It was all good. Starting from an elevated command prompt, I'm then going to go in and change down to C drive, Windows, System 32, Server Manager Tools, or Migration Tools, sorry. And you can see here that there's a guy that's called SMIG Deploy. That's the package that basically I have to go off and break apart and turn into the package specifically for 2003 systems running an x86 processor. The way I do that is SMIG Deploy, create a package, architecture-wise, x86, because that's what my system happens to be for 2003. My OS that I'm using is Windows Server 03, and I want to dump it down to a path that I'm going to remember, c/source. Don't forget, all this is documented. You've all done the reading. You've done your planning. And you also have access to this slide and this recording. Take a look at it afterwards. So that's done. Change back into my source directory. Take a look. And I now have my migration tools for Server 2003, x86, all set and ready to go. Now, on making this available across my network, because I don't have a USB stick on my system here, I'm just going to go ahead and make this real simple. Share this out with the administrators so that my administrators on my network will have access to it. That's good. I started my PowerShell install. Finished it. I then went ahead and expanded and got the package for 2003 systems. Now, going back to my 2003 system, PowerShell's done my installation. I can then go in and say W2K8R2, oops, up here, sorry. Show me the stuff that happens to be here inside source, and I want to copy this file locally to my source directory. Not shortcut, full thing. Thank you. There we go. And then I'm going to go ahead into source, into there. Type in SMIG deploy to basically launch and register the tools within PowerShell. That gets this guy ready to go from a source perspective. There we go. Good. And then, just so you guys can see this guy a little bit better, I'm going to bring him up a little bit from font size-wise so you guys can see him when I do the migration. So, made the package, got it on my source server, now on my destination server, which is this guy. Oops, it's ended. No, that's my main server. There's my other guy. So, this is server core. No GUI interface. Got to go through and do command line stuff. He's already been domain joined, already been installed, already has an IP address. He's all set. What I do have to do is I happen to have a bunch of commands, and because I'm sure that you guys don't want to see me type all these commands all day, I put them inside a notepad that is available for you guys to see. What is it? Migration tools on core. Make this a bit smaller so you guys can see it better. Come on, turn on the word wrap. There we go. So, load the prerequisites. I got to go ahead and basically load the PowerShell commandlets. I have to go in and initialize them, and I have to install .NET FX on my server box, my server core box. So let's come over here and say paste. That's my first step. Second step, I have to then go in and load the feature set of server migration, because it is simply a feature of 2008 R2. So that's a good old OC setup command. Next up, I have to launch PowerShell. Once the server migration tools are there, launch PowerShell because it's in the path. PowerShell's now running. You can tell by the little PS in front of it. And then I'm going to go ahead and say import the module for Server Manager to add the feature. And I'm going to add in the migration feature of this, which basically gets the tools installed on my box. And then lastly, because these are commandlets that are in PowerShell, they have to be added in from a snap-in perspective to my initialized in my PowerShell window. So I'm going to go ahead and actually, you know what, say edit, paste, bring them on for migration, and they're all initialized and set and ready to go. My source is ready. My destination is ready. I broke apart my tools to make them available to other people to go off and use. And I'm all set to go for my first migration. And speaking of migration, what am I going to migrate first? Well, let's take a look here. What do I got to do? Except that I went the wrong direction. Yes, I did. There we go. Two is where I need to be. Yes. Phew. So when the server migration, what's the process? Well, these are the PowerShell commands we're going to be running. They are documented in case you want to take a look at them. But basically, in essence, we're going to be doing an awful lot of the get feature set, export settings, import settings to basically bring things out, bring things in. And the cool stuff from data transfers is a send and a receive to be able to send actual data back and forth between these different systems. So the tools are installed. So next up, let's finish off that Active Directory migration before we start our other stuff, because Active Directory migration is more of a priority for our infrastructure. Now, for this, it's going to involve a little bit of extra work and time in a demo that I don't have time to do, because it takes about 75 minutes to migrate your Active Directory. So what I suggest you do is instead search for Rick Claus, WSV330, on Bing. You'll find the Tech Ed session. Go get a coffee or a pint based on the time of day. Sit down, have a read or a drink, and a watch, and then watch that recorded session to finish off your Active Directory. There we did. The AD project is now done. Don't you wish it was that fast? Now, DHCP migration, what do you have to worry about? First off, how many NICs are in your source, and how many NICs are in your destination? Any guesses as to why? Anybody? You need to know which scopes bind to which NICs. You need to know the MAC addresses, and they have to match up. If you have 5 in the original and 3 in the second one, you got a little bit of a problem. You got to work that out. So yes, you then go and do a backup. You install the migration tools. You register them on the destination server. The OS is installed. You put the tools in. You're good to go. And then go ahead and proceed with the migration. So let's take a look and see what that actually looks like. I'm going to turn this the right way this time. Yes. I did. Okay. So from the temporary guy, which is right there, he already has PowerShell up and running. He already has everything else and set to go. I need to go in and install and add in the DHCP service role. So that's pretty simple to do. I just need to say add Windows feature, and I'm going to be adding DHCP. Ooh, it's installed. I'm then going to go ahead and check to make sure the service automatically starts. DHCP server. Oops. You are allowed to tell me when I make a typo, right? Okay. And then I know it's not running. It's all good. And now I'm going to go ahead and actually do that migration. So from the source, what I need to do is go back to my DHCP main box, which is this guy, which is up and running. He already has the tools initialized, and he's ready to go from a migration perspective. Pretty simple. I want to first of all show you that DHCP is up and running. If I can make this a bit bigger. So we can see here that I've got a scope. It's up and running. It's active. It's all good. If I go and expand this and take a look at my scope and my leases, notice here that I've got active members of this particular scope, plus I also happen to have a reservation. So there's definitely data inside this thing. It's not just a fake, empty DHCP system that's up and running. So that guy's there and he's good. The first step you should always do besides planning is do a backup, because you never know what's going to happen. So I'm just going to go ahead and throw this inside a new folder and then say OK. And it goes and backs up the database and we're all good. You should also obviously do a system state backup and everything else on that box. But we're just going to keep this simple for this demonstration. The backup's done. Next up, I'm going to actually do that migration that I talked about. So here's the migration tool PowerShell window. And it's called export SMIG server settings. And I'm going to use feature ID to identify what I'm migrating specifically, DHCP. I'm going to migrate all users in case there's any special user accounts. And all groups, because there are groups listed as well. I'm going to migrate the IP configuration of this box of the IP addresses, because the clients are used to talking to the same guy. That's the IP config switch. Then I'm going to dump this inside a temporary migration file, which is done with a path statement. I'm dumping this inside something called migration data DHCP. That's all right. And give it to me verbose, please. You always have to put in a password to lock up that file to make sure no one else gets access to it. And this is something you're going to see in a continuous basis throughout the rest of this demonstration going on today, is this little window popping up, doing the exporting settings. It's always going to ask me for a password. I'm always dumping my files to a temporary network server. This happens to be called Hyper-V because it's my box, right? And then that's where the data is going to go. Based on the number of size and scopes that you happen to have, it's going to remember all those, back them all up, and take significantly longer with the more data that you have to go off and do that migration of. The important thing is, though, on the receiving side, all I have to do is do the opposite. Import, bring it in, unlock the password, and it brings up those settings because the software is already installed and ready to go. But there's a little bit more that I have to do on top of this, which is, I have to get rid of the authorization. If you remember, 2008 started this thing where DHCP servers had to be authorized to start. And if you didn't authorize them, they wouldn't be allowed to start, and the service would shut down, and you wouldn't be able to serve out addresses. Well, I can do that from a command line, but I don't want to do anything until this guy finishes off his initial export. First one's a little bit long as it kicks in the juices, and we wait for it. And then all of a sudden it goes, bang, I'm waiting for you. Come on. There we go. So you can see here, just to show you the window, that definitely he's off and working, he's good, and he's migrated, and he's done. He's saved to an external file. Next up, I need to go off and run that command line, which is quite simple, to get rid of my DHCP server. It's called netsh DHCP. I want to say delete server contoso-dhcp.corp.contoso.com with an IP address of 10.50. And we're all good. He's good. Now, this guy, basically, I'm going to do one last thing, ipconfig/all. I'm going to dump that to a temporary file, hyperv-1 migration data DHCP. Oh, thank you. Let's break out of that. ipconfig/all, dump it off to Hyper-V, migration data DHCP, ipconfig.txt. The only reason why I'm doing this is because I'm too lazy to write down the MAC address. This is going to basically write it down for me so I can use it on the other end. Come on. There we go. It would also help if I put in a -1 for my server name. That's how fast it's supposed to go. Okay. Lastly, shut it down. Shut down. There we go. Now, on the import side of things, pretty simple. DHCP temporary box, which is right there. He's good. Power cell's already been installed. He's already got it up and running. The migration tool's already there. Let's figure out what his IP address is. Start cmd ipconfig/all, because I'm going to need him in just a moment. There we go. I can close off that guy. And let's start a notepad for the ipconfig, which is hyperv-1 migration data DHCP ipconfig.txt. And that is the MAC address of the second guy, which is good. And then lastly, the actual install and working of DHCP, in this case, it's going to be notepad for import text. There we go. So this lovely long command is import the feature ID of DHCP, all users, all groups, bring in the IP configuration for all systems, do a source physical address, source MAC. Okay, my source MAC is this guy. Right? In this case, I've got a simple environment with a single NIC. So there's my source MAC. My destination MAC is from the other notepad. Oh, I got it backwards. Surprised no one caught that. This is my source MAC. Right there. This is my destination MAC. That just averted a demo failure. You should clap for that. Hang on, wait till it works. Let's see if it works here. There we go. There's my destination MAC. Highlight it, copy it, go back into my PowerShell commandlet, and then paste it because I know I would make a mistake typing this. Press Enter, put in the password. Oh, you know what? Do that one more time. I forgot that. Here it is. Right here, my server name is wrong. There we go. Boom. Collecting data, please wait. Now, because I asked to migrate the IP address settings, this is actually going to start off, do the implementation, and then magically, boom, my remote desktop session is going to freeze. I know it's going to freeze because that little spinny wheel that's up there is going to stop. When that spinny wheel stops, I know that my migration was successful and my IP address migrated as well. And there it stopped. So this basically is now non-responsive. I can close that guy off. Come on. There we go. And I'm going to reconnect back up again to my DHCP T-box because he has a new IP address. And look, it actually has yellow that says, hey, stuff got migrated and we're all good, which is great. Next thing I got to do, though, is I got to go off and do netsh, netsh, DHCP, server, add server. And the server name is contoso-dhcpt.corp.contoso.com with an IP address of 192.168.10.50 and enter. Added it. It's good. And then finally, let's start that service because I'm now authorized. Start service DHCP server. And it starts. And boom. Your users were without DHCP services for about 15 minutes, 10 minutes. That's a big one for where it goes. How does that actually work? Well, here's my DHCP system, which is a client running Windows 7. If I go off and take a look at my administrative tools that are installed in this guy, I can go up and view my DHCP system and say manage authorized servers. Look at that. He's been listed as being authorized to start. I can then go and say, yeah, that's the one I want to manage. And if I go off and take a look at this guy, he's all green. There's the scope. There's the leases. And there's the reservation. So I just did a massive migration of all my DHCP scopes and addresses, map a one-to-one ratio back to my MAC addresses on my new box, up and running and good. Everything's now working for my DHCP migration. And that's the big first demo done. Man, I gotta talk fast. So, what do we got? Post-migration, make sure it works. There we go. Next up is file and print services. File and print services I'm gonna do together in the interest of time so we can finish this off and make it all work. But, just so you guys know, print server migration, you don't actually use the PowerShell tools to do this. There is a tool built in to 2008 R2 that allows you to manage and migrate systems, mainly print servers, maintaining the queue security, maintaining the contents of the queues, maintaining your drivers, and it's all good. The process basically is get the tools, prepare the source server, back it up, verify if it works after the fact by trying to print. I didn't change the computer name of my DHCP server. Anyone care to know why? No one cares? I can just move on. Oh, you care. Good. How do clients ask for DHCP address? Do they say, hello, dhcpserver.contoso.corp.com, give me an address? Or does it simply say, hey, I need an address. It's a broadcast. It doesn't care about the computer name. So provide there's no other resources on the DHCP server, you don't need to serve and change the computer name. Print servers, how about that? Do you need to have the same computer name for print servers? Abso-freaking-lutely you do. Otherwise, you'll have all your print queues not work. So let's go ahead and dive right into this. You guys don't need to look at a fancy arrow, that's for sure. Okay. So from my system right now, I've got install the print services on my box. Okay, so I have to be able to manage this remotely. So to do this on my server manager for my main 2008 R2 domain controller, which is running right now, I'm just going to go in here and say add a role, and this is going to basically give me the tools to be able to do this from. The role that I'm going to add is my print server role. I'm not just going to run any print services off of this box, but I just want to have the tools installed to be able to do this from this one box. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to remotely control my existing print server called Contoso FP1 and add in the drivers, because more than likely I only have x86 drivers on that box, and I need x64 drivers. So I'm hoping you've already done your inventory and you know what all the print drivers are in use inside your environment, and you've already downloaded all of your 64-bit drivers and you're all set to go. Everyone nod their heads, yes, I've done that already and I'm all set to go. So there's no automation for that part, unfortunately, with the built-in free tools. So here's Print Manager. And you can see here under Print Servers, there's none listed. I'm going to add in the print server of Contoso-FP1 and get him happy. There we go. Now, Contoso-FP1, if you take a look at it, has a couple of printers. And just to keep this simple, I've got a 2300, two drivers, and they're up and running. But driver's perspective, take a look at this. They're absolutely, x86. They're not x64. So the first thing I got to do is add in my appropriate drivers that are 64-bit. Here's your first hitch you're going to forget. Turn off that checkbox. I'm not updating my x86 drivers. I only care about my x64 drivers. I'm going to say I have disk because I've got my drivers for this guy under Hyper-V-1 source printers HP x64. I've got that guy, which is the first one. And I've also got to add in the second one as well. The good thing is I can repeat this in case you missed it the first time. Still the same location, just a second driver that's in use, this guy right there. Finish and install, and he's good to go. Okay, next up, I need to go off and basically choose to export this system. And it's going to export the drivers and all the queues and all the contents. Very simple. I say export to a file. So export to a file. I'm going to store this guy on my temporary server. Migration data. Oops. HYP. That's right. You know what? Let's Hyper-V-1 migration data printers. How do I spell it? HYP? That's right. My mistake was not having 3 cups of coffee before this statement. That's the mistake. Okay, so it's going to take my queues, take my drivers, take all the information, save it to a local file, password lock it, and it's all set. Next up, I need to go off and install the appropriate roles on core while I'm waiting for this to finish. There we go, it's finished. So in this case, I've got my temporary core box here, and it's going to be once again a start, a WOC setup. And in this case, I'm going to go off and say printing server core role. Word of caution, see the exact name? The thing that I don't like about this is if you have one typo, like you're typing in front of 500 people like I am right now, you make one character wrong, you don't know. There's no error code thrown. It just doesn't work. So this pause is a good thing because I know it's actually doing the right thing of installing some files, and we're all set. Now, before I go ahead and to finish off the rest of printer migration, I'm going to pre-plan this guy because I'm getting close on time here to go ahead and install the stuff for the file servers as well. So in this case, I'm going to say core file server as well. And I'm going to say over here, DFS network server. And then FRS infrastructure as well, because my file server has a bunch of different stuff on it. So here is FRS TRUCTURE. Okay. So I'm going to come back to finishing off the migration of the printer once I talk about the file server migration, which is the next little quick section here. And then I'll come back to this demo in just one moment. So, printer server, doing the file server right now. Basically, back up your full server, worry about some stuff for Active Directory and DFS, inventory your files and your settings, make sure you know how complex they happen to be, and then you have an access account with the appropriate rights, which is administrative rights. Determine what needs to be migrated, because maybe not everything needs to. Go ahead and get it ready to go in your new destination box, join the domain, install the same file services. Warn your users, we're doing a file server migration this weekend. Just be aware of that to stop using the server at 5 o'clock on a Friday. Go ahead and proceed with the migration from there. And the actual migration itself, you're basically going to stop any changes on the source server during the migration process, export the settings. You're then going to migrate your users and groups because of security parameters. Migrate the data twice, potentially, if it takes too long. The first time is the bulk of it. The second time is a delta. Then you're going to go ahead and then migrate the identity, the IP address and the computer name of that box. And then you're going to go ahead and configure DFS if you need to make that happy. So let me show you this guy here for where the migration happens to go. So for this migration tool to work, you have to go ahead and set up a little couple of things. So I've installed the core services for DFS, file server replication, and the core file services. That guy's done. The next thing I got to do is actually gotta change the firewall. If you've ever seen NSH commands to change a firewall, it's ugly looking. So instead, I'm going to use my remote administrative tools here to pull up Server Manager. And then I'm going to go talk to Contoso FP1T. And then I'm going to modify the firewall rules to include a rule. Come on. Here it comes. So down here in the configuration, Windows Firewall, inbound rules. You can choose whatever port you like, but you have to open up a port between these two systems on TCP and UDP. The default is port 7000, so it's in the upper ranges. I'm going to allow the connection across my networks, and this is my TCP migration. Call it whatever you like. I'm going to make another firewall rule for the same thing for a port, also on 7000, but this time UDP. And I'm going to call it my UDP migration. And he's now good to go from a firewall perspective. On my main file server, so here's my file and print number one guy. Here's my migration tools up and working. I'm going to have to migrate my local users and groups to be able to do that. And then I'm going to go ahead and do the next part of migration, which is the actual data, and send the data off to the system. Come on, I know I'm going to have time to finish this demo. Migration, no. Exports, make server data for settings. I'm going to say users, group to a path of Hyper-V-1, migration data, local groups. Make it verbose. Lock it with a password. There we go. Now I have to bring those in to my temporary guy, which is right here, which is PowerShell. I need to add in the snap-in. Not ass. getting the giggles now, that's not good. PSS Snap-in, Microsoft Windows Server Migration. No. Server Manager Migration. Import SMIG server settings for users. Groups. Path to the file. Local groups. And make it verbose. It is more fun than batch files. Connecting up, unlocking the file, making sure I have access to it, and then it's going to go ahead and it's going to create me a bunch of groups and users. I'm assuming that you guys use local groups and global groups, that sort of stuff, like we learned in the old days to be able to go off and do things like Corp Seattle sales, Corp New Orleans sales. So there's definitely groups in here with definitely users that were migrated inside this one individual setting. Now, on the temporary guy as well, actually, you know what? Let's go back and start the send of the data here to get this guy ready to go. So here he is. Send SMIG data, and I'm going to send it to a computer name of Contoso-FP1T currently. The source path is my local data directory, and my destination path is data as well. Keep it simple. And I'm going to say recurse. I'm going to say include all the files and force this to happen. Now notice here it says opening connection. Get to the other side, please. So I'm going to put him to the side, bring back this guy over here, which is my temporary guy. And I'm going to say on this side, receive SMIG server data, and I don't have to have any command lines. I press enter because he's listening on the proper ports. And watch this. Preparing. It's like, come on, let's go. Wish you could spin those little things a little faster. Oh, waiting. It's so impressive when it happens. It's just, it'll blow you away. Watch how fast this goes. Ooh, there it goes. Receiving, decrypting. So it does a encrypted process from one to the other to bring it all down. And then I just simply need to assume the identity. And there it lists off all the files in case you wanted to see what they were, because I said verbose. Thank you very much. It came across. And now let's go ahead and assume that identity. So because I don't want to damage this file server at all, shutdown/s/t5, I don't need him. He's gone. That's the original source guy. My destination guy, which is my FP1, there he is. What do we have to do? Well, first off, to make this work nicely, I'm actually going to attach up to him using this direct connection here instead. So you guys can see it, and I won't lose my connection to it. So log on to it. This is my network independent connection mechanism back to my system. He's there. I now need to go off and to migrate that account. So first off all, I have to go in and delete that old account of the computer, which was Contoso FP1. That's done with Active Directory Users of Computers. Come on. Almost done. Inside here under Computers, find him for FP1, delete him. Yes, he's now gone. On my temporary box, which is, where'd he go? There he is. Ah, temporary box. There we go. View full screen. And let's get this guy up and running here. So he's been there, he's there. So I need to go in and say sconfig. And in here, I'm going to go in and change the computer name to contoso-fp1. Administrator and password. I do not want to restart just yet because I also have to assume his IP address just in case someone still has a hard-coded address to him. So that's under network settings. First adapter, change network address to a static address of 192.168.10.40. There's this guy. 255, default gateway 192.168.10.1. Normally this would have killed my remote control session, but because I'm using this guy, it's not going to kill it. And then lastly, put in a DNS server, 192.168.10.20. It's good. Break out of there. Shut down, restart him with a timer of 2 seconds with my 4 minutes left. I said shut down. Restart him with a timer of 4 seconds. There we go. While that's rebooting, because I want to finish off the last little bit of slides that are here, we've done the file servers, we've done the print servers, we've got certificate services left, and unfortunately, because of the amount of time I got left, which is 4 minutes, I don't want to try to rush that one. So what I'm going to say, I want to go through the content of it. You're not going to be using PowerShell tools. You're going to all be doing this from the command line. It's actually pretty simple, but there's no possible way I could do it in the amount of time that I happen to have. And so the basic idea is a utility called certutil. You got to back up the certificates. You got to back up the encryption process that you're using. You got to back up your templates that you already have installed. You do a manual backup from the graphical GUI tool for certificate services. You lock it down. You export the certificate to the local box. It's all safe. It's all good. You shut that guy down. You uninstall the role. Then on the new guy, the trick is you have to have the same computer name, same IP address. And you then go and you install certificate services. You load the backup back into it again. You load the templates. You load the private key. And then you simply start the services. It literally is that easy to be able to do. And as I promised to you guys, before the end of today, I will actually have a recording of that available that I'll make available to you guys if you're interested to see that one screencast just of that one piece of that demo, which takes about 8 minutes to finish for certificate services so you guys get a chance to see it. Now, the migration process, there you go. And basically, that cuts off the last of our list of things that we had to actually complete. You can take your planning and now put it away in your filing system and raise a glass and celebrate because you just migrated your entire infrastructure over from 2003 to 2008 R2. So generally speaking now, it's not we can help you, it's more of a you can help yourself because you have the resources to be able to do this now, which is great. Your action plan is you all took an oath. I don't want to have any bad luck for the All Blacks on Saturday when I see them trounce the Wallabies in Brisbane on Saturday. So please do your reading, do your planning, go through the guides. Test out the tools in a trial lab environment. I did it all here. You'll be able to take a look at that in the video that you saw or that you'll have access to a little bit later on. Look at the opportunity to change things up so that you're not always implementing full servers. Core servers are the way to go. They're not that scary. I hated PowerShell when I started about a year and a half ago. I'm nowhere near a proficient expert with it, but the only way you get good at things is you try to use them yourself. So go ahead, take the plunge, try it out. Test your backout strategy. Mine was simply having to bring the boxes back up again, and then also document your plan a little bit better than a crib note size sheet of information scratched on a cocktail party napkin for stuff that's out there. All these links are live. You can get them from the download of the PowerPoint slides for your resources for each and every single one of these steps. Migrating server roles, going ahead and looking at the migration tools installation, DHCP server migration, print server, file server, and certificate services, all documented with step-by-steps that are all there. I do have an ask for you, though. Here's my ask. I came a long way, 4.5 hours to Vancouver, 17 hours from Vancouver to Auckland with a flight on Tuesday. I fell asleep in the chair in my hotel room getting ready for this on Tuesday because of the jet lag. Take a moment. Fill out an eval, please. There are prizes to be won. Do a search. You're at the session, which is called WSV 320. And then don't forget, it's a little teeny tiny icon that's barely visible that says fill out an eval. The scores are from low to high. I'd love it if you can give me some comments. how I could do better, what I could do better to improve in the presentation. And hopefully, you guys found value in this information that we had today. So that's good. And with that, I want to say thank you. I do have some time for Q&A. If you're interested, at the very end of the session, we just wrapped it up with a full 1 hour. I'm going to be here and presenting the same room at the end of the day, later on today, about DNS troubleshooting. But I'm going to be around in the hub or in the hallways. I'm always wearing my green hat. So look for the guy in the green hat. And with that, I'll say thank you very much, everybody. It's been a blast being here in New Zealand and Auckland. Go All Blacks!